Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for January the 7th, 2019. This is David Corey. My usual co-host, Richard Hurley, unfortunately can't be with us tonight. He was traveling from his home and office in Florida to the great state of Alabama, just arriving late this evening, not able to join us, but a shout out to Richard. Hope he had a safe trip and is doing well. Tonight we have another fast hour of information and news, hopefully of interest to veterans, families, and friends across the country. But first, I'd like to begin by expressing our support and admiration for Doug and Don Newsom, the owners of VBS Radio, for their amazing accomplishments in overcoming the devastating and horrific fires that destroyed their home and business in the town of Paradise, California, 2 months ago. Doug and Don, we applaud and support all you've done. We wholeheartedly wish you and VBS Radio the greatest success in the years ahead, and thank you both for all you do for everyone across the country. And next, before moving on to our news tonight, I'd like to acknowledge two sponsors of our show, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, state of Florida, whose financial contribution helps us provide this weekly show for the benefit of veterans and their families across the country. I'd also like to wish to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, your comments, and questions. So you can call us anytime during the show if you want to grab your pen and paper. The toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. For our devoted listeners, you'll know that this is our first live show in 2 months. Our last live show was November the 5th, which is Monday of the week of the tragic fires in Paradise, California, which devastated VBS Radio. And although Doug and Don Newsom were able to get the station back on the air quickly over the holidays, Richard Hurley and I were unable due to other commitments and the holidays to have live shows. So you may have heard reruns of some of our greatest hits, so to speak. We hope you enjoyed those shows. But now we're back, looking forward to 2019, and hopefully you'll continue to find our shows and our guests of interest. Tonight, on a personal note, I wanted to mention some news that received tragic news. It's not veteran news related, but it's something that everyone may find important to know, which was a high school classmate of Richard Hurley and mine. We attended Jesuit High School in Tampa, Florida, graduated in the class of 1977. One of our classmates passed away earlier today in a tragic accident Tampa, due to carbon monoxide poisoning. Apparently, our classmate had gone to dinner with his wife. They returned, and he must have accidentally left the automobile running. It was one of these new cars without keys, a keyless car, you know, where you start it and you stop it with a button. And because they tend to run rather quietly, apparently, it's being surmised that he may have forgotten that the car was running. They live in a three-story condominium in Tampa, and that carbon monoxide, as everyone knows, is and can be deadly. And very tragic accident that has taken the life of our classmates and friends. And I just want to remember our classmate Thomas Martino and wish for the best for his his wife, who apparently is in critical condition in the hospital, and our condolences to his family, their family, and many friends in Tampa. But it's kind of a tragic reminder, and something that maybe people don't think about associated with these cars now that don't have keys. You're used to turning the engine off, taking the key, but now many of these new cars run so quietly, you may not even realize that the car is still on. Very tragic situation here. Our class, our high school class, is rather closely knit, and we had just had a Christmas luncheon in Ybor City, Tampa, in December, and we had a good turnout. Excuse me, and our Thomas Martino was there, and he was very close to many members of our class. So it's just a tragedy. All right. Well, so I'd like to return to our scheduled news tonight. We have quite a bit of news to catch up on with the VA. And again, I'd like to remind our listeners that it is a call-in show. So anyone that would like to call in, offer their comments, or ask questions, please don't hesitate to do so. Again, our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. Those of you that may have followed our show over the last year and a half, we were talking extensively going back to 2017 about the VA disability appeal system, how complex and convoluted and extremely slow the process is, frustrating many veterans who rely on that disability compensation just to pay their bills, survive financially. And you'll know that back in 2017, Congress had passed a massive reform of the VA claims and appeals system, primarily the appeal part of it, totally revamping it, the first major revamp in decades. And that law was called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. It was signed into law by President Trump August 23rd of 2017. And that was in the first year of the 115th Congress, which had started in January of 2017, and in the space of about 6 months, had passed this legislation through both houses, through committees, the Veterans Committees on both houses, House and Senate, and then passed overwhelmingly in both chambers and went on to the President. Well, as I said, it was signed into law in August of 2017, and part of the law was that there would be a period of time for the VA to implement this law. It's going to take some time, and they were going to implement it first on a trial basis over the following year and a half. Well, that year and a half now is about to run. So the law is supposed to fully take effect by the end of next month, February 2019. So this is a major, this will have a major impact, and 2019 will be a year of many changes for veterans that are in the appeals or will be seeking appeals of their disability claim. So I want to take a few minutes and talk about that law. We've talked about it on prior shows. And as I say, for about a year and a half, there was the trial implementation of this law. And that implementation was called the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program. The acronym for that was RAMP, R-A-M-P. And many of our clients and other veterans around the country were presented by the VA with opportunities to opt into this new system, even though their claims and appeals had already begun under the old system. The old system is what the VA now calls the legacy system, or the legacy appeals, of which there are still many. But I wanted to spend a few minutes tonight talking about what this new law will do, because once it goes fully into effect, most likely by the end of February next month, then veterans will find that if their claim is decided in a fashion that they're not happy with, either, let's say, it was denied or it was granted, but with a rating lower than they think measures the level of their disability, and they want to appeal it, this law law presents them now with three new options, or as the VA calls them, three new lanes of how to deal with the next step. So let me go over these three new lanes or paths that veterans will be offered under this new system. So let's say a veteran files a claim for back injury, post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, some other disabilities, and the VA adjudicates that. Might take months to do that, but they make a decision, and the veteran's not happy with that. Under this new law, the veteran will be given three choices. First, and this is not in any order of priority, but they given the opportunity to file a supplemental claim. In other words, to say, okay, I've got new evidence that I think will be enough to convince the VA. So they can file a supplemental claim. And the good thing under this law is that it will preserve the effective date if it's ultimately granted, meaning effective date of the originally filed claim, which is a good thing. The other option is a higher level review. And this option most closely equates to under the old system of what's called the decision review office. But this higher level review actually gives veterans fewer rights than under the old system. That was a criticism that we talked about on this show a lot over the last year and a half. And this higher level review basically means there will be an entirely new review of the claim by an experienced adjudicator, not the same person that made the first decision, but someone else. It may be at a regional office across the country. We don't know where that will be, because the VA farms out these things. At least they have been so far. But this higher level review, one of the major limitations is that a veteran cannot submit new evidence for consideration by that high level reviewer. Nor can the veteran ask for a personal hearing, which was another right under the old system, where you could ask for a personal hearing before the decision review officer, and obviously whatever evidence was presented at that time would have to be considered, whether it was testimony or other written documents. So this higher level review option is basically a fresh review based simply on the evidence already in the record. And in some cases, that might seem like a smart choice, but you really need to make sure, veterans and your representatives, that there's everything in the file already that you wanted to submit. You do have the right with the higher level review for the representative or the veteran, if the veteran is not represented, to have an informal telephone conference with this review officer. But again, it's not a hearing. You don't get to submit new evidence. You can discuss the evidence and basically make arguments, but you can't submit any new evidence. You can't submit new medical evidence or testimony from the veteran. So that's a limitation. So that's the second option. The third option is you can skip the supplemental claim, you can skip the higher level review, and appeal directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals, which is in Washington, D.C. And the BVA, Board of Veterans Appeals, has added new judges in the last year. They've added more staff, so hopefully they'll be better equipped than they have in past years to deal with a high volume of appeals. But if a veteran chooses to go that route, the veteran will have a couple choices. They can either choose to have the Board of Veterans Appeals make a decision based just on the existing evidence. In other words, no new evidence will be added, and that will be presumably faster than this other option, which would be that the veteran chooses to submit new evidence and or ask for a hearing before a Board of Veterans Appeals judge. So time will tell. My experience over the last year as the VA was implementing this program on a trial basis under what they call the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program is that many veterans advocates, whether they were lawyers or veteran service officers, were very wary of the VA. They were very skeptical that the VA was going to do the right thing, that they felt that this law, which had been essentially promoted by the VA itself, was simply a way for the VA to make its own work easier, and that if to whatever extent it would result in speed speeding things up, it was still going to be the detriment of the veterans. In other words, they might make faster decisions, but they were likely to be rubber-stamped decisions and not favorable decisions. Well, that was the widespread perception among veteran service officers and veteran lawyers across the country. Not unanimous, probably, but it was the widespread perception, such that as last year went by, the VA administrators were recognizing that very few veterans were opting into this Rapid Appeals Modernization Program. So they had to put on a dog and pony show that they went around to the different regional offices to try to convince people. And we were invited. I received an invitation as a veteran's lawyer to a couple briefings at the regional office, local regional office, in my case at St. Petersburg, Florida, to have someone from Washington, D.C., as well as the regional office, try to explain why we really should trust the system and give it an opportunity. And that even if we were suspicious about the higher-level review being fair, that it still would result in an opportunity to appeal faster to the BVA, which was a good selling point. I have to give them credit for that. But in any event, 2019 is going to be a big year for veterans that are involved in disability appeals, and certainly for their representatives, their advocates, and veteran groups. This is legislation is going to be watched carefully as far as how it's actually implemented. And a couple key possible sticking points will include, among others, the Board of Veterans Appeals itself. I said earlier they've hired more judges, more staff, but have they really hired enough to make a difference? Because keep in mind that they've historically had a big backlog where it would take, once you finished appealing at the regional office, you still would wait 3 or 4 years before getting a hearing with the Board of Veterans Appeals judge. 3 or 4 years. And then even after the hearing, you might wait another year to get a decision after that hearing. So it was really an absurd system. And whether the BVA has improved things remains to be seen. But now we'll see. The VA itself and a few of the major veteran groups that I think were kind of under the thumb of the VA were big proponents of this legislation in 2017. We'll see how it actually works out. If any veterans out there, their advocates or family members have any thoughts, again, give us a call tonight. Let us know your thoughts on this law, your experience over the last year and a half, if you participated in the so-called Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, the RAMP program. Our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. So it's a major piece of legislation, one of the most important that Congress has enacted as far as veteran disability issues in decades. Certainly every year they've tweaked certain things, but this was a major overhaul, which also tells us that it's not likely to be revisited by Congress itself until we've had the VA as an opportunity probably for a couple of years to see how this is actually going to operate. 2019 will be really the first year when it's fully implemented. Some of you listening may be wondering, you know, so if you get a denial, which of these three lanes is going to be right? Should you file a supplemental claim? Should you ask for a higher level review? Or should you appeal directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals? As you might imagine, there are arguments that the VA makes for each one of these. Why, in a particular situation, it might be best to use one of these choices more than the other. So it's really important that the veterans realize that there are pros and cons to each of these options. Make sure you talk to an informed representative, whether it's a veteran service officer or a lawyer. And even get second opinions if you're not sure, because there may be some gray areas depending on the evidence that's already in existence in your case, whether you want to go with a supplemental claim and then offer new evidence because in the higher level review lane, you can't offer new evidence. Basically, a review of what's already in the file with the option of an informal telephone conference, one-time phone call between your representative, if you have one, and the reviewer. So we'll see. Now, the good news is, though, if you disagree with the decision and you choose, let's say, the supplemental claim route or the higher level review, and they make a decision and you're not happy with that, the good news, or even the great news, is you still can appeal onward to the Board of Veterans Appeals if you want. And historically, what we found is that the Board of Veterans Appeals will provide much more thorough review of the evidence in a case and much more thorough analysis, application of the relevant rules. And it's a complex area of the law, statutes, regulations, and a growing body of case law that has to be considered. And the Board of Veterans Appeals is comprised of administrative judges, and they have more legal training, typically far more expertise in veteran issues than do your typical higher level review or initial rating decision person at regional office. So there's a lot to be said that why some people may just choose to go directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals in the case. So we'll see how that works out. Stay tuned. We'll be monitoring developments on that. Like I say, the new system is supposed to go fully into effect. In other words, what that means is veterans will no longer have the option to opt into it. They'll have no choice probably by the end of February, the end of next month. But meanwhile, before that time arrives, if you have a case that's still under the old system and you want to opt in, there's still time to opt into the new system. You can do that. Again, talk to your representative, whoever that might be, veteran service officer or attorney, and get their analysis about whether that might be a good thing in your case. What are the pros and cons? What's the state of the evidence in your case already? But it is something to consider. Some other news related to this, which I think is very important and really good news, is that the VA has responded to the complaints over the years by veterans and their representatives that the VA was not communicating well about the status of cases. So a decision might be made, and you may not hear anything from the VA for literally years. Well, the VA has now created a more improved online method of tracking the status of a claim or appeal. A veteran has to create, or if they've already created, use an account, which you can create on the website vets.gov. Easy to remember, vets.gov. And you can log in one of three ways, either through your eBenefits account, and eBenefits has been around now for a number of years, or through your My Healthy Vets account, which is many people associate that with the medical side of the VA, or you create what's called an ID.me account. Either of those three ways, you can create an account that will allow you to access the information the VA is giving you to track the status of your disability claim or appeal. As I say, you can create account if you don't already have one. Again, the website for that is vets.gov. So it is a very helpful system. The VA has made great strides in improving communication. And we'll see how that goes. One of the criticisms that I've heard and that I've experienced myself with the earlier versions of what they called the e-benefit system is that, they did give you some information, but it was very little information. It actually raised more questions than it answered. The information was so skeletal that it was basically useless if you were trying to figure out, okay, what did they decide? What stage is the case at, and how long do I have to wait to the next stage? So they have made some improvements. I personally think there's still room for more improvements, but at least the VA has moved in the right direction on that. So Those are two big developments with the VA Disability Appeal System. First, that they've revamped, they've overhauled through legislation the options, and that the VA is trying to improve its online method of how you can track the status of your claim and appeal, at least get some general idea of how long it'll be until the next step in your case, which is very important. At least veterans have become used to, unfortunately, rather low standard by the VA of having to wait years from one step to another before major action. Hopefully the VA will improve that, as this legislation is supposed to do, and the VA will do a better job at keeping veterans informed. A couple other ways that veterans and their representatives can track what's going on. These options have been around for years, actually. If you go to va.gov or vets.gov, you can look for the link where you can send them a message. It's through what the VA calls the IRIS system. It's an inquiry tracking system. And you can, by filling in some requested information, identifying information, you can then send them a message, which is basically like an online email. And it will get directed to whatever regional office or VA is handling your case. And usually within a couple of days, you get a response. In my experience using that system, using the so-called IRIS system, kind of mixed experience. Sometimes the answers we get back are too superficial, but on the other hand, they do give you an opportunity to just ask follow-up questions, and you should do that until you get, you know, as specific information as you can. So the IRIS system is another way to do that, and then of course they have their phone numbers, VA phone number of 1-800-827-1000. That's their general toll-free number. But some veterans have also gone through their member of Congress and House of Representatives or one of their two U.S. senators as another way to try to lean on the VA to get some answers, particularly if it's been a long time since the VA has done anything on their case. So there are different ways, and added to that, you have the White House hotline for veterans you can call. It's just another way to, as I say, rattle the cage, try to get the VA's attention, find out what's going on in your case, which is important. But along with that, a question that we get all the time from veterans, because these cases still, they take a long time, is what can they do to get a faster decision, particularly if they're experiencing some type of personal hardship in their life? Well, There are rules that have been around for a long time, but it's worth bringing them to people's attention. And the rules are slightly different depending on where the case is at. If the case is on appeal to the Board of Veterans Appeals, there's one set of rules. And if it's at the regional office level, there are some similar rules, but with some slight differences. I want to go over those because, again, it is a question we get all the time from veterans, which is there any way to speed their case up, which is basically what that equates to is, when can you get the VA to take one veteran's case and move it ahead in line among before other veterans' cases are decided? Because basically it is a first-come, first-served system, as probably you aren't surprised at hearing. But what does the Board of Veterans' Appeals say as far as what are the rules for advancing a case on the board's docket? Well, as I say, the board is required by law to review appeals in their docket in the order that they've been received, unless there is an unusual hardship or, as the regulation and statute says, other sufficient cause shown to advance the case. What are those examples of a hardship or other sufficient cause? They've included several scenarios, which unfortunately we see quite commonly. Severe financial hardship, like having to file a bankruptcy petition, home mortgage foreclosure, or homelessness. Those are examples of severe financial hardship which might convince the VA to move a case ahead on the docket. Serious illness, but the VA doesn't just take a veteran's word for that. They require medical proof of that, and that typically means a physician's statement that documents a terminal or grave illness, including clinical findings. But I've had cases going over the last decade. I've had represented veterans who were dying of cancer that the VA acknowledged that they had terminal cancer, but because they weren't facing death imminently, meaning within a very short period of time, they still did not advance the case. And that's why it's so important to have a thorough documentation from a doctor explaining what the diagnosis is and how severe it is, you know, what the expected, what the life expectancy is. Unfortunately, it has to be that detail. Now, another case, another scenario that the VA has considered as sufficient cause is advanced age. You may wonder, what is that? Two different set of rules that we've encountered. The Board of Veterans Appeals will say advanced age is 75 or older. But we've encountered regional offices, at least some regional offices, that use a different standard. They say advanced age for this purpose is 85 or older. So you may run into different rules across the country. The BVA seems to be the most generous, if you want to call it that, by saying advanced age is only 75 or older. And, of course, age is something that's easy to document in the record, but you do have to bring it to their attention. They're not going to sift through their docket of hundreds of thousands of cases to look for veterans that are 75 or older. The burden is on the veteran or the veteran's advocate to bring that information forward. Now, another basis, another that's considered a sufficient cause for advancing case on the docket, has been some sort of administrative error by the VA that has resulted in a very significant delay in docketing the appeal. And you really have to look at that on a case-by-case basis. But what it basically translates to is if there's been little action on your action on your case for a long time, and unfortunately, with the way things operate in the VA, a long time, you know, typically means years, then you definitely need to bring that to the VA's attention and put in a motion to advance the case on the docket. Supporting documentation is very important. And you can submit it to the board. Their address, fax number is on the VA.gov website. So just some common sense practical pointers is be aware that there are possibilities to get your case moved ahead of other veterans. But you do have to document them. As I say, they include severe financial hardship, very severe serious illness, basically being on the veteran's deathbed, or advanced age, 75 or older for the BVA, at least for some regional offices, 85 or older, or some administrative error by the VA that has really delayed docketing in the case. So that's another important development veterans should be paying attention to, which is with this new law being implemented, will cases be moving faster? And if they're not, be aware of these avenues to try to get an individual case. All right, so let me move on to some other news of interest to veterans here in this next segment tonight. And one thing about the VA.gov website is they do provide their press releases, and I always try to follow that to see what news the VA is announcing. But I also receive a lot of email from veteran groups, private organizations, and I try to track those, too, to see what's going on around the country. But here's some news that might be of interest to some veterans. Today, January 7th, registration is opening across the country for the 2019 National Veterans Wheelchair Games. Those wheelchair games will be held July 11th through the 16th in Louisville, Kentucky. And the VA announced just this past week that veterans who are interested in registering, they can do so by registering online starting today, January the 7th, through April 15th. The website to go to is wheelchairgames.org. So the National Veterans Wheelchair Games will be July the 11th through 16th in Louisville, Kentucky. If you're interested in registering, go to the website wheelchairgames.org. Now, this event is presented by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and Paralyzed Veterans of America, PVA. It's the world's largest sports event for veterans who use wheelchairs. and it'll be held, as I say, July 11th, 16th at the Robley Rex VA Medical Center in Louisville, Kentucky. The event is a sports and rehabilitation competition to engage veterans who use wheelchairs due to spinal cord injuries, amputations, or other neurological conditions. VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said, and I quote, "I encourage every veteran interested in competing at the National Veterans Wheelchair Games to register for this important event. The games exemplify VA's commitment to supporting veterans as they navigate through recovery, rehabilitation to active, independent lives. Sports and recreation play an important role in this journey, enhancing veterans' positive mental health and physical well-being," unquote. According to the VA's press release from last week, every year veterans challenge themselves and cheer on their fellow veterans in many excitement and action-packed games. This year, David Zerflew, the national president of PVA and a service-disabled Air Force veteran himself, plans to compete alongside hundreds of other veterans at the games. The National Veterans Wheelchair Games offers 19 different competitive events, including air gun, archery, basketball, bowling, field events, hand cycling, nine ball, power soccer, quad rugby, slalom, softball, swimming, table tennis, track, trap shooting, and weightlifting. So, full spectrum of different types of sports. Veterans compete against others with similar athletic ability, competitive experience, or age. Again, more information can be found at the website wheelchairgames.org. And you can also follow VA Adaptive Sports on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Sports for Vets. So if you're interested or you know someone that is, please pass that information on about those events. Now moving on to our next segment tonight, another really important issue that we've talked about in prior shows, and we've had guests from different veteran groups that have been involved in this issue, is that of homelessness. Now, homelessness is a big problem across the United States, affecting all Americans, many Americans, regardless of their veteran status. Of course, this show being the Veterans News Hour, we tend to focus on some programs affecting helping veterans, and I have some more news in that regard, but we do want to recognize that homelessness is a problem that affects many Americans, and there are a lot of programs out there at the local level, state, and federal, and a lot of private organizations that do great work in this area. So shout out to all those that work to help those that are homeless. But the most recent news that I have for you on that issue is that on December 28th, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs announced the recent effective end of veteran homelessness in the city of Little Rock, Arkansas. And that's the latest community to essentially declare an effective end to homelessness, bringing the U.S. Another positive step closer to ending veteran homelessness nationwide. Little Rock, Arkansas joins 65 other communities and three states, Connecticut, Delaware, and Virginia, that have effectively ended homelessness. So kudos to those 66 communities, which now includes Little Rock, and the states of Connecticut, Delaware, and Virginia, whose programs have been so effective that they've essentially ended homelessness. Now, I'm sure that it doesn't mean 100% success, but they've made such great strides that the homelessness is now relatively rare in those states. VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said, "No American veteran should be without a safe and stable place to call home. We will continue this important work until we achieve a day when homelessness among veterans is rare and brief in every community across our country." I know many of our listeners, and includes myself, say that this really ought to be extended to everyone that's homeless, certainly not just veterans, but certainly over the years, homeless veterans have received particular attention for various reasons. The Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, the VA, and the various other federal, state, and local partners have worked together to help veterans secure stable housing through a program called the Home Together Federal Strategic Plan to try to prevent homelessness and try to end homelessness. Since the year 2010, the combined efforts of HUD, VA, and state and local partners have helped cut veteran homelessness nearly in half. This includes a decrease of more than 5% in veteran homelessness between 2017 and 2018. since 2018, since 2010, over 698,000 veterans and their family members have been permanently housed, rapidly rehoused, or prevented from falling into homelessness through HUD's targeted housing vouchers and the VA homelessness program. Since I mentioned Little Rock, Arkansas, I wanted to mention that the Central Arkansas Veterans Healthcare System has worked with other members of the local community to put veterans on a pathway to safe, stable housing. And they provide what they call wraparound supportive services, so they remain stably housed to ensure that whatever the spectrum of problems that a particular veteran or family is facing, that those are addressed with the necessary services so that they don't go back to being homeless. VA medical centers across the country serve as hubs for more than just veteran healthcare services. And that's no exception. The Arkansas Veteran Healthcare System, they work closely with state and local governments, many nonprofit organizations, corporate partners, and other community members to help veterans meet the needs of housing, employment, transportation, and other services. So they try to provide holistic support for veterans and their families, and certainly including those that are homeless. So kudos not only to those in Little Rock, Arkansas area, but to the other communities across the country, of which the VA counts a total of 66, as well as three entire states. Kudos to all those organizations that have been a part of those efforts. And hopefully those efforts can be studied and duplicated in other cities and states, and not just for veteran homelessness, but for everyone that's homeless. And certainly we know that many large communities, such as Los Angeles, has a really significant homeless problem and very tough to solve it. But need to look around to see what's being done across the country, states, cities that have been successful, and see what works and try to follow those. So another great program. Again, one last point before I move on to our second to last segment tonight. Is that the veterans who are homeless or at imminent risk of becoming homeless, or if you know a veteran that is, contact the local VA medical center. If you don't know where that is, you got a computer, go to va.gov and look for locations. You'll see whether it's a hospital or a clinic. You can find the nearest medical center. Or you can call. If you don't have a computer but you have a phone, you can call this toll-free number. Specifically for the homeless issue, which is 877-424-3838. That's 877-424-3838, which spells out 877, the number 4, and then AID VET. 877-424-3838 to help a homeless veteran. Now, in my next segment tonight, I wanted to give a shout out to the success of the VA healthcare system, because as acknowledged by a press release from the VA on December 13th, Dartmouth University released a study that concluded that VA hospitals outperform private hospitals in most markets. I know many people slam the VA health system, and going back to the year 2014, where there was the scandal that started at the Phoenix VA Medical Center, and then that kind of snowballed into publicity about some problems at other VA hospitals, that let's not ignore the positive things and all the good things done by the many thousands of people that work in the VA health system. According to an independent Dartmouth University study that was published in December in the Annals of Internal Medicine publication, VA hospitals outperform private hospitals in most healthcare markets throughout the country. As VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said, and I quote, "This is proof that the hard work and dedication of our VA employees is making a real difference in the lives of our nation's veterans. It validates the strong work we're doing for veterans under President Trump's leadership and giving our heroes the very best quality of care they have earned for their faithful service to our country," unquote. Dartmouth researchers assessed 121 regional healthcare markets that had at least one VA facility and one non-VA hospital in conjunction with Hospital Compare Data, a public database that ranks hospitals on quality measures like mortality rate and patient safety indicators. According to the findings, VA hospitals provide the best care in most referral regions and rarely provide inadequate care. Veteran Health Administration hospitals provided the best care in most referral regions and rarely provided the worst care. So it gives you some idea in comparison to the private or civilian sector. So it's an important thing to keep in mind when you're hearing news about the VA. Sometimes, you know, the media likes to report the bad news. They don't highlight the good news. Well, here's some good news. And anecdotally, what I have found in talking to many veterans is that many are extremely happy with the care in the VA system. Now, yeah, sometimes there is a problem of weight, and that's resulted in what's called the Veteran Choice Program over the last few years, which has its own problems. So the system's not perfect. There's a lot of stress on the system. The VA Health Administration has a lot of vacancies in the general neighborhood of about 40,000 vacancies. So you can see that they could certainly use more people. And if you're in healthcare and you're looking for a rewarding career, working for the VA is one valuable opportunity. A couple more things on the study before I move to our last segment tonight, which I think is notable about the findings that Dartmouth University released in their study, was that VA hospitals were the best, or they were above average in comparison to civilian hospitals for treating heart attacks, heart failure, and pneumonia. VA also ranked best in local markets at least half the time for measures, including death rates among patients with serious complications after surgery, for collapsed lung due to medical treatment, broken hip for fall after surgery, and bloodstream infections after surgery. These are all things that are used basically to track the care provided by hospitals. The VA supports most of the findings, although the VA does not agree with the authors of the report's stance on community care, which the VA says ignores the fact that for many decades, community care has served a vital tool for ensuring the VA has the ability to provide veterans with the best and most timely care. Certainly the VA system does have some room for improvement. There's no doubt about that, but this report from Dartmouth University does really reinforce the fact that the VA does a lot of good things in the healthcare arena very, very well. The VA has been offering this community care since, particularly since the World War II era, starting with the then Veterans Administration Hometown Program that began in 1945. Former Secretary David Chulkin was a staunch advocate for community care and sought to increase its role at VA, arguing that competition with private providers is necessary for VA facilities to improve continuously. So we'll see further developments probably over 2019 and more attention by Congress as far as oversight of the VA's choice program, where veterans are given the opportunity in some situations to get VA-funded care in the private sector. Complicated issue, though, because you're dealing with funding and also even opposition from some veteran groups who are concerned that efforts to so-called privatize veterans care will just simply done to for profit purposes, but also will hurt the VA system overall. And the VA system does a lot of things uniquely well for veterans because of kind of the collective historical expertise that's been developed on the care of veterans' injuries that are due to war. So, more to follow as we track these issues over the next year. Now we're getting to our last 5 minutes of the show tonight, and I want to close with something that Richard Hurley and I have talked about on practically every show since we started the show in January of 2017, which is a reminder to veterans and their families about a very important VA program called Coaching into Care. Coaching into Care helps veterans who are having a tough time transitioning back to home life, whether it's after leaving the military or returning from a deployment. Returning home can be tough. And on this show over the last couple years, we've had interviews and played recordings of interviews of many veterans and family members who talked about the kinds of problems that they've experienced in making the transition from military service to civilian life with psychological and physical disabilities. And for a lot of veterans, it's tough to admit that they may need help. This Coaching into Care program is one way where family members who are, you know, who have a front row seat to what their veteran is going through. This Coaching into Care program offers free coaching to help them help their veteran. So it's very important. If you're in that situation, here's the toll-free number. Grab your pen and paper. The Coaching into Care program run by the VA, toll-free number is 1-888-823-7458. I'll repeat that more slowly. 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, Coaching into Care program, 1-888-823-7458. Now, I also want to remind listeners that if they know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the VA also has a veteran crisis line to help, which is a separate number from the Coaching into Care program. The crisis line is a 24/7 operation. And in the past year, they've all opened another location, so they have more people staffing the crisis line across the country. The crisis line number is 1-800-273-8255. And then press the number 1 for the Veterans Crisis Line. That's 1-800-273-8255. Again, many veterans tragically have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the health care they need to cope with their problems, and the crisis line is there to help. 1-800-273-8255. So I hope you found it to be an informative show tonight. I tried to cover news about the Veteran Appeals program and the changes that we're going to see in the year 2019. We're going to track those as we see things develop over this next year, as well as other news, hopefully of interest to you. If you missed all of our show, maybe you tuned in late, you can listen to an archived podcast of this show. It'll be posted on our website within a few days. And if you're interested in listening to any of our prior shows, we've had an interesting array of guests over the last 2 years. So check those out. They're on our website, bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. So we're about out of time for this evening. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on great BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group, and I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.